Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:35 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 27th, and I thought we'd kick off with UK gilts because we had a significant downward dynamic, and I think that was on the back of the statement by Rishi Sunak to the effect that our public finances are twice as sensitive to changes in interest rates as they were before the pandemic and six times as sensitive as they were before the financial crisis. So that's the exact quote. And at least that's a public announcement that the government is aware and willing to talk about and perhaps even act to contain the fiscal expansion. And also to deal with the very real potential that debt servicing costs could very quickly get out of hand. Because we can definitely think about, where we were ahead of the financial crisis. All the way back in 2008, interest rates or yields on the gilt were around 5%. Then, as the yield has contracted, the quantity of debt has increased. And then it multiplied in 2020. So debt service or interest rate sensitivity of UK government debt doubled. And it's certainly not alone in that development. Now we have a inverse head and shoulders here. And the yield has come back in a significant fashion in here today. And it's back below the psychological 1%. So I think that there's at least the potential that it's going to come back into the upper side of the base formation and potentially even come down and test the region of the trend mean. But I think we do need to start looking past some of the initial euphoria and then just simply look at the reality that the UK is looking to try and grow its way out of trouble and that they're willing to tolerate higher inflation because they believe it's transient. So that's the big bet that everyone is taking right now, that the inflation is going to be transitory, that we don't have to worry about it in the short term because growth is coming back in a big way. But of course, that's also ignoring the fact that growth was so miserable last year and the base effect is still very much in effect. So it's flattering growth. So they can afford for the moment not to do very much about inflation. They can even start raising wages. So they took off the ban on public sector wages. And of course, if you give people more money, they are likely to go out and spend it. So that's likely to be stimulatory. And that will also help to ignite growth. Then there's also the additional stimulative measures that are being taken for the hospitality sector. And we saw a large number of upper dynamics coming through from particularly the pub groups in the UK in here today. But perhaps the more important point here is that if we look at the downtrend that's been underway now for decades, then it's still intact. We still have the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, it's in no way a consistent trend. And the most consistent thing about it has been the downward bias overall. There have been plenty of occasions over the entire bull market where it has traded above the 200-day moving average, and none of those moves have held. So we're at another one of those occasions on right now. We've had a big downward dynamic in here today, a fall of 12 basis points. On a yield of only, well, now less than 1% is a very significant move. And it suggests at least a low of near-term significance for the price and potentially medium-term significance. And we had an almost identical move, although certainly not quite as strong, in the US. So there was the 5-year yield has been coming down, and they were what is effectively sold out of bonds because demand was so strong in the 5-year auction today. So it was the lowest number of bonds that were sold to primary dealers in years. So that's significant because it suggests that there was plenty of demand coming in for the 5-year. Now the 10-year as well was also in negative territory, down 6 basis points. But perhaps more important, we've had a significant move in the yield curve spread. And I think that's particularly relevant because it helps to highlight that we're in a rather different environment now than we were in the aftermath of the credit crisis. And I think the only close parallel that we have is what happened after the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s. We had a very deep and inverted yield curve back then. And of course, that was also in response to the very large move higher in interest rates in the late 1970s. But then, as we came out of that, we had this bounce back, and it never really gained momentum, and then it eased back down. And by the time we got around to the 1990s, the late 1990s, it had gone inverted. So maybe we're going to see something similar. Maybe we're going to see that on this occasion, unlike the peak in the mid 90 in the early 1990s or the early 2000s or after the credit crisis, that the yield curve spread is not going to approach the 250 basis point level, but rather that because of the pandemic and the accelerated approach to that big contraction, that we've skipped the very large declines, and that it might be a few years now before we get an inverted yield curve, and that the yield curve will continue to contract. And if that's the case, and we continue to see downward pressure on the long end of the curve, and perhaps some upward pressure on the short end of the curve, well, then it would suggest that we're coming into a more mature phase of this expansion, that this whole talk about the end of the early portion of the cycle, and that we're going to move quickly into the mid portion of the cycle. Well, this contraction in the yield curve spread is helping to support that view. If it comes back below 100 basis points, well, then it'll be a lower low, and then we'll have, I think, some pretty strong confirming evidence that we're moving into, or that the yield curve spread has peaked for this cycle, and that we're now moving back into the, I guess, a more modest pace of advance for stocks, which will ultimately end in a bubble. And arguably, because of where valuations are right now, well, then we are potentially already in a bubble. And of course, when every time that bond yields contract, well, then it acts as rocket fuel for the growth sector. So the Nasdaq was able to push on to a new high in here today. Now, it didn't hold it, and it wasn't an especially dynamic move. And I still think that we can have some consolidation in the region of this peak. But it was definitely the growth sector helped to sustain the advance in here today, because the S&P 500 was in negative territory. And it does have a history of failing to sustain upward breaks. So there's still the clear scope here that we're going to have at least some pause and consolidation, even if the low that was put in at the beginning of October continues to hold. We're probably due at least some pause and consolidation. We also had a pretty weak day in China today. The index was down about 1.5%. So we're not out of the woods in China just yet. And Credit Suisse came out today and said they think it's still too early. And the increasing potential that the most successful entrepreneurs are going to have to share in the demise of their companies, well, then of course it also suggests that if they're going to target the leaders of the companies, they'll also target the foreign shareholders. So that's obviously a challenge. And so far, the CSI 300 hasn't been able to push back above the 5,000 level. I don't think that the Chinese government want to see a stock market collapse, but they're not particularly interested in a big advance either. The HSI, sorry, the Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong was also in negative territory, and it's still holding the sequence of lower rally highs. So it's right in the region of the trend mean, and it's a nor I think a normal area where we might anticipate a little pause coming through. We also saw today that Bitcoin has come back by about $3,000. So it's now pulling back below the 60,000 level. So we had a lot of the buy the rumor on the anticipation of the futures-backed ETFs being launched, and now that they have been launched, well, then we have to start thinking about, well, what does that mean? Well, BitO got right up and tested the limits of how many futures your any one investor is allowed to hold in the CME. So it popped on the upside for 2 days after it was launched, and then subsequently hit the limits of how many futures it can hold, and has been coming back since. But the challenge here is that it's a futures-based ETF, and Bitcoin trades in a contango, so there is a guaranteed loss going to be implied in the roll. And futures-based ETFs were really designed for day trading, not for long-term investments. The majority of people who want to hold Bitcoin, they want to hold it for a good long time. And there's this argument that all you have to do is hold Bitcoin for 4 years and you can't lose money. But if that holding period is in a futures fund, you most definitely can lose money. And that's, I think, starting to be brought home to investors. Then there's the additional point that because these ETFs have an implied loss baked in, then they represent a really good vehicle for shorting the market because they offer leverage on the market to the downside, whereas they don't offer it on the upside. So then when we think about options, well, there's the clear scope that there's going to be a lot more interest in put options than there will be in the call options. We can definitely see that volume is starting to pick up on the downside, and this suggests that these are going to be great vehicles for shorting the market. There will obviously have to be other investment vehicles created that will give leverage on the upside, but because there aren't any physically based funds right now, well, then that's rather difficult. It also creates significant arbitrage opportunities between spot and the futures, and there's going to be a lot of people playing in that market because it's still reasonably inefficient and there are big premiums. Now, obviously, over time those premiums will contract, but there is absolutely no getting around the fact that futures-based funds are not good news for investors. So Bitcoin is in a correct, or at least it's pausing right now. I think it's a bit early to call it a correction. And so far, and particularly since May, we've had reactions in the region of about $10,000 to $12,000. So it could easily come back down and test the 50,000 level, or at least the upper side of this underlying range, which should be somewhere around 53,000. And if it does that, well, it might be a somewhat larger pullback, but that wouldn't be all that surprising considering we're right in the region of the all-time peaks. But it will need to see an upward dynamic in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And a multi-month period of consolidation could quite possibly start to unfold here. Then Ethereum had got right back up to test the peak, and this is looking like a downside key reversal. So it went to a new recovery high in here today and then closed way below the lows of the last 3 days. So this certainly suggests a peak of near-term significance and at least some consolidation. Gold prices were off the lows yesterday and we're in mildly positive territory again in here today, still pausing around this psychological $1,800 level. But what I find interesting is that there's demand for bonds, and bond yields are starting to come back down. And that would imply at least that people are less worried about inflation and perhaps willing to give the benefit of the doubt to transitory inflation. And yet gold prices continue to remain firm. So we're in a rather acute environment where there are muddled arguments about what's likely to happen next. But if the yield curve spread is in fact peaking and that it's likely to trend lower over the next few years, well, then we're probably going to enter a bubble phase, and that some of the valuations, which are rather extravagant right now, are likely to become significantly more extravagant. That should also be beneficial for assets like Bitcoin, even though it's correcting right now in a liquidity rich environment where inflationary pressures and growth pick up, and or at least there's no real upward pressure on interest rates in the very in at least in the next year or potentially even 2 years. That could quite easily fuel a bubble. So we're certainly in this interesting environment, and I think that is part of the reason why gold is firming, because governments are betting on growth. They're not willing to take the measures necessary to control the fiscal situation. And that's likely to continue to stoke inflation, even though investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to inflation starting to moderate. Well, then that action and that belief, and that is so widespread that it will moderate. That's quite different to what we've had in the past. And the one thing about I guess the one thing about the markets is that consensus generally doesn't tend to be the correct prognosis, because the very fact that governments are all of the opinion that inflation is transitory, by the fact that they're all believing that and acting as if it is transitory, they really are laying the foundation for it to not be transitory. So that's, I think, one of the more important facts. Then, as we think about the rest of the world, well, the Indian market was in positive territory, and it is now rebounding from what was a very mild pullback. And it was up yesterday, held on to most of the advance in here today. And it's been particularly inert. So this kind of inert trading activity is still holding, and there's a sequence of higher reaction lows which is very much intact. But India doesn't go up in a straight line indefinitely, and there will be buying opportunities in the future, and there will be significant portion bouts of volatility. And we are quite overextended relative to the trend mean. So I don't think it's a market where anyone needs to be in a hurry to chase. But it is still consistent on the upside. The Vietnamese index continues to test the peaks and is right on the cusp of breaking out of this most recent range. And it remains one of the best candidates to benefit from this increasing geopolitical tension with China. I think with the release of the Dune movie, there are increasing comparisons between Taiwan and Arrakis. And I remember reading those Dune books back when I was about 12 years old, and when they introduced about 20 different new words in the first 10 or 15 pages, I really found it very heavy going, but I did enjoy the most recent movie. And of course, the big question is what to do about Taiwan and its dominance of the global semiconductor supply chain, because China obviously wants it, and the rest of the world doesn't want to lose it. So it is likely to be a significant point of contention. And the fact that China has successfully tested hypersonic missiles, well, then that's also something that's particularly noteworthy. So there's certainly a lot going on in terms of the geopolitical structure. And when Joe Biden says that, of course, the USA will defend Taiwan, and when Taiwan and when China says that Taiwan is their red line, they're really quite serious, and that hasn't changed in decades. So the time that Taiwan has been able to exist in the margins and simply just get on with business, I think that is largely expiring. Now, the stock market continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. And then, of course, Singapore is very much in the same boat, but much more friendly towards mainland China, not least because it's significantly further away from mainland China. So the Straits Times Index is also bouncing and is on the cusp of pushing up and out of this most recent range. Australian government bonds were yields were stronger today, but it's unlikely that that strength is going to persist when we've had such big contractions in yields in other jurisdictions in here today. And the ASX 200 continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean, and it remains in a benign, reasonably consistent environment overall. The Australian dollar continues to steady. So then Canada also announced in here today that they've completely ended their quantitative easing program, and they might even accelerate the pace with which they're willing to raise interest rates. So that, and this is the Canadian dollar shown inversely, so this is the dollar falling, the US dollar falling against it, and it's been ranging for the last 6 years. There's the real possibility that the Canadian dollar is going to strengthen again through the 120 area. That would be certainly, I think, no, that argument would be bolstered if oil prices continue higher, but they were in negative territory in here today, down $2. So a little pause coming in the region of $85. And I think it's also worth highlighting that the differential between Brent and WTI has narrowed considerably. We're down to about a dollar, and that's generally a sign of a lot of concern about deficits of supply. So ultimately, we're going to see more drilling, and I think some of the sentiment towards the energy sector is beginning to turn, and a realization is emerging that we're not going to go from carbon emissions to no carbon emissions overnight, and that it's going to be a process, and that in order to get to the utopian ideal of so many people, then we're going to have to deal with the reality that we're going to have to burn a lot of fossil fuels to get there. And that would suggest that we are going to see an increase in supply, and it's extremely profitable for a significant portion of the energy sector to drill and produce at these levels. So that will encourage new supply into the market, and it would suggest that we're going to see at least some pause in consolidation. The weakness in China and the questions about inflation, well, they weighed on the copper price in here today, so it's continuing to pull back from the upper side of the range. It was up in an extremely dynamic manner 2 weeks ago, and now it's consolidating. And I think $4 continues to be the big Rubicon. If it can hold this level and just consolidate above $4, we're still in a very benign environment overall. And certainly, we're coming back more into an area now where if support is going to be found, then it should start to occur pretty soon. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.